This week on Art on the Air features the multi-talented actor, broadcaster, author, and more, Mark Edward Willows, sharing his storied career from child actor to versatile entertainment professional. Next, we have novelist John Young sharing his life journey and readings from his newly released novel, Getting Huge. Our spotlight is on Friendship Botanical Gardens' upcoming season of Under the Stars.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at LakeshorePublicRadio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. Art on the Air is now available on WDSO 88.3 FM Chesterton on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Friendship Botanical Gardens in Michigan City. He's going to talk about a series they have coming up called Music Under the Stars Concert Series, which is returning there. And it's going to be running from May through October. We have Ashley Neal, who's Event Venue Coordinator. Ashley, welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us briefly about the gardens, in case somebody doesn't know about that, and then the other things you do before we move on to the events that are happening there, especially the Under Stars event.
And how you found Friendship Botanic Gardens yourself.
Yeah, so Friendship Botanic Gardens were actually started in 1933 after the Century of Progress Fair in Chicago. And we've been around ever since then, and we are a great community resource for getting back in touch with nature, walking around. We also host community events that are either free or low cost for, you know, holidays, also educational events as well. And then we have our Music Under the Stars summer concert series. That's a fundraiser. And that starts in May and goes all the way through October. So we have opening day for the gardens is Tuesday, May 2nd. We are open Tuesday through Sunday, May through October. And then our first concert is Johnny V. He is a local artist, and that is on May 4th. And then we also have Johnny the first Thursday of every month, May through September. And then his last show is actually the last of the summer concert series. And that is on October 1st. It's his Harvest Moon show, which is a little different than his regular shows. Definitely something that people should come out and see, even if they've seen some of his earlier shows. The October 1st is a little different. And then going from there in July, on the 14th and July 15th, we have two great country tribute acts. One is an Eric Church tribute. The other is a Chris Stapleton tribute. And then that Sunday, July 16th, is the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. And that is a returning concert. We've had them a couple of years in a row now, and we absolutely love to have the local talent. And then that following weekend, we're going to have on July 21st and July 22nd some great pop hits throughout the decades. And then in August, we have a band called The Boy Band Night. So they do a tribute to some of the best boy bands, you know, like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, etc. That's August 11th. And then August 12th, we have Welcome to the Other Side drag show. That following weekend, Friday the 8th, August 18th, is a local artist named Robert Rolf Feddersen. And he does folk, rock, things like that. And then that next Saturday is going to have a variety of musical acts to be announced.
Excellent.
Where are the girl bands?
There's going to be some girls featured in our hits through the decades that second weekend in July. So I'm excited for all of them, though.
Well, while you have the season already booked in the future, and we have musicians and things that do listen to the show, would they contact you for future performances or things like that to get on the schedule?
Yes, absolutely. We love to feature local talent, and they would just reach out to me either via my contact information on the website, or they can reach out to us on social media. Those will get forwarded to me as well. But yeah, I'm definitely always available for local talent.
So what's the cost of doing this? I know you have this the beautiful pavilion that's just been built, and I think there's a variance in cost. Some is free, some is $20. So how does that all work?
Yeah, definitely. So our community events are usually free or very low cost. Our concert tickets pricing varies, so anywhere from $20 to $50 is the range. Our local artists, like Johnny V, that's $20 for his first Thursday concerts. And then some of our events that have, some bigger names, those are going to be our more expensive tickets.
Very good. And do you have any kind of concession there or something like that that people can enjoy? Or can they bring wine and sit on the, they do at Ravinia. Is that possible?
Yeah, so that's a great comparison. We do have beer and wine available for purchase, as well as non-alcoholic beverages too. Some light refreshments also available to purchase, but you're definitely welcome to bring in a picnic basket. We've had people bring in pizza from local pizza places, a full charcuterie board. We're pretty open to about anything.
Excellent. And if you wanted to get other types of things there at the gardens, and it's a beautiful place to go, and especially all the different nations and things, you're the contact person. What other type of events do you have available at the gardens?
Yeah, so aside from just our concerts, we have the holiday events I mentioned. So we just recently had our Bunny Hop Easter event, our Wake Up the Gardens Volunteer Cleanup Day. The next event on the bracket is our annual fundraiser gala. That is on April 29th at Heston Hills. Tickets for that can be bought through our website. It is Havana Night themed, so there's going to be Afro-Cuban live music and a cigar bar, live and silent auction. Definitely a fun time there. And then we also have our educational events and other holiday events throughout the rest of the year.
And you're always looking for volunteers, right? For
yes,
the clean up yes. The gardens.
Absolutely. Volunteers can also reach out to me at my other email, which is thevolunteer@friendshipbotanicgardens.org. I wear many hats.
Well, Ashley, tell us real quickly how to get there and the upcoming event with Johnny V.
Yes, so we are right off of US Highway 12 in Michigan City. We're just a short drive from the main drag of downtown Franklin and Washington Park Beach in Michigan City. And our first concert coming up is Johnny V, which is Thursday, May 4th from 7 to 9.
That's Ashley Neal, event coordinator for Friendship Botanical Gardens in Michigan City. Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Year Spotlight. Art on the Air Spotlight and the full one-hour Art on the Air program on Lakeshore Public Radio is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kenny White, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Mark Edward Willows to Art on the Air. Mark, where to start? Since childhood, he has been interested in the entertainment business and has worked as an actor, producer, writer of daytime dramas and films, a feature reporter, radio talk show host, podcast host, and I will mention that he's fulfilled a dream of writing a children's book. The title is Silas and Sophie. Thank you, Mark, for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Well, thank you so much. Geez, when you read my credits, it makes me feel real old.
Really accomplished,
very
right?
Accomplished,
not old,
yes.
Accomplished.
I guess.
Well, Mark, how we always like to start out with our guests, we like to know your entire story, and you've got a long story to tell, but like your whole, what I call origin story, how I like to say it is, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
That's what people ask me. How did I get from here out to Hollywood in California? But anyway.
I think you said he ought to be in pictures.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it actually began, Larry, at 3 years old. And it's a very strange story. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, actually the Roseland area, which is a very popular community. And I grew up there as a kid. And my mom used to push me around in a stroller, naturally, like all the mothers did with their children. And the mothers used to come up to my mother. And of course, this is when the word gay meant something totally different than right. It does today. And they always said, geez, your Mark is such a gay little boy. Meaning I was always talkative and outgoing and still am that way today. And I tell everyone I got my parents in trouble with the neighbors when I was 3 years old because I rattled what my mom and dad said in the house. But anyway, they told my mom, just like they say, he ought to be in pictures, whatever. So anyway, my mom did some research. And of course, that was pre-internet, God knows, and all that. Well, anyway, she knew that there were, you know, agents that represent these kids, whatever. So she took a picture of me and she mailed it in the way it went, you know, with the stamp and in an envelope. And it took a week to get there. But anyway, we received a call back from an agent in Chicago who says we would like for you to come in and bring them. So my parents did. And of course, things today, Larry, work a little different because if that were the case, there'd probably be 500 kids. But back then, it was only me, one kid in the room. And the agent sized me up from head to toe and she said, book them. That was it. And I was booked for a McDonald's commercial when I was three. And it was shot at the original McDonald's up in Des Plaines, Illinois, which I believe is still there. It's a museum today. And that's how the career began. Well, anyway, I did that. We didn't make very much out of it. But about 3 years later, when I was 6 years old, for me, it was always with my mom and dad a tradition to go to Chicago and see the windows at Marshall Field at Christmas time, all decorated and all. So we did that. And we were not very far from this agent's office. So my mother says, geez, why don't we just run up and say hello? We're here. So they did. We all went up there and I still can visualize this because I was like 6 years old at the time. Well, anyway, we walked in and there was a gentleman there and he was an agent from California, Los Angeles. And he says to my dad, I want to take your son to California. And we looked at him and we're like, what? My dad's like, what? Well, anyway, I got signed to do cereal commercials through the Quaker Oats Company. And when I was 6, 7, 8, and 9, I did all of these commercials. And I got to meet people like Little Mikey from, you know, remember the commercial? Those were all my competition. And anyway, I met Ron Howard way back in the day when we were kids. And I worked at Paramount Studios and I got to visit the set of Andy Griffith. And I met all of them, including Otis, the drunk, who was happened to turn out to be a very intelligent man. And I loved that visit. An ironic story, I'm actually friends today with Andy's daughter, Dixie, mm-hmm. who has done my podcast show many times. And all.
Interesting show.
Yes, thank you. And I told her this story about visiting her dad on set and everything. And that is exactly how my career basically began. And I just, and then, oh yes, when I was 8 years old, I won an award. It was Outstanding Child. It was not an Emmy Award, but Outstanding right. Child TV Commercials, whatever. Well, the award was presented to me by Lucille Ball, which was really exciting. And she told my dad, I remember her exact words, this kid is going to go places. And I had Keith Thibodeau, Little Ricky, on my show just a couple months ago. I told him this same story. And it was so funny. And, you know, I just had a love for the business. One thing led to another. Now, as I was growing, of course, I always wanted to go to college, get my education, get my degree, which I did. I did all of that stuff. And anyway, when I went to college, I was looking at the catalog. And it said, and I always remember this, be the next Barbara Walters. And I'm reading, like, sort of, you know, Be With the Stars and Wine and Dine and doing. I'm like, geez, that sounds something I really ought to do. So anyway, I signed up. My very first class was Journalism 101. And I just had a love for it and took it all the way up to a master's degree. And that is how my career began and doing more. And that's how magazines came up, writing for the daytime drama. It was Days of Our Lives was the show. They sent me out to Los Angeles, do a behind the scenes on the show. And when you do, Larry, a writing position, as you probably know, you sort of come in the back door,
right?
Which means you meet the powers that be. You know, if you're an actor, you know how that goes. Next, move it, you know. But I got to meet the people in control of things. And that's how Days of Our Life started. His name was Al Rabin. Wonderful gentleman. He passed away a couple years ago. He was the senior executive producer. We just started talking. We also had a connection because, believe it or not, he was from the Chicagoland area. So we clicked right there. And before you know it, it was like, I have this role for you on the show. Would you be interested? Whatever. I got to play the bartender, and I worked with veterans like Deidre Hall, Gloria Loring, Christian Alfonso, Peter Reckel. And this was in the 80s. And then, you know, being the guy I am with kind of this so-called big mouth, I met the casting director on the parking lot of NBC of the daytime show Santa Barbara, which was on in the 90s.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I was talking with some people on the lot, and we brought up Chicago. And she says, oh, are you guys from Chicago? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, so am I. Hi, I'm Maggie Erickson. And I says, hi. And I hated to sound so naive, but I says, who are you? You know, she says to me, I'm the casting director of Santa Barbara. And you know me, I looked at her and I says, well, whenever you're looking for a hot, handsome guy to drown his sorrows in booze, think of me. I'm available. Well, 2 weeks later, I got a call from Eric Previn, the executive producer, who says, Mark, your script is on its way. And I landed up being a police officer searching for the killer on that show. So it was really fun. And just to date, it's been doing commercials, writing for magazines, doing stuff. And this is how it started. And yes, just like you mentioned, I've done radio. I've done that. Now I'm doing podcasting. And I've got a show with Hollywood celebrities. And as you know, some of my guests, Little Ricky, Marion Ross from Happy Days, Donnie Most from Happy Days. I had a lady on from the old Lawrence Welk show, Mary Lou Metzger.
Oh, yes.
That people really, yes, enjoyed her and talking all about the maestro himself, the music. And this is what I have been doing. And bottom line, it's just all my life. I've never done nothing outside of entertainment and been very fortunate how one thing just led to another.
How did you fit in writing a book?
How did I fit? Well, you know what? That was always a dream. That was a dream of mine to write a book. And actually, I did that one. And I'm currently working on another one, which is just set to go for publication. And I always wanted to do a theme book. And I love doing children's books. And I thought, what would be greater than a Halloween book? So that is what I did. And I have a cat whose name is Blake. He's also a little star. He does print ads and different things. Solid black cat. Gorgeous. Blake is the star of the book. And I can just give you a little premise of the book. It's he's a solid black cat. On Halloween, he turns into an orange cat. And he spreads magic to the children all across the land. And there will be witches and ghosts and goblins and all of this stuff in the book. And then at the midnight hour, he turns back into himself, back into Blake, back to the black cat. And the very last sentence of the book is, well, after all, it's Halloween night.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, so
that's the sentence. And it's a very heartwarming story about the magical night for children that Halloween really is. And all the things and ghosts and goblins that Blake encounters along his journey that night. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I'm hoping to have that book out by this Halloween.
Excellent.
Well, what I was going to ask, too, is do you have an illustrator for it?
Yes, I do. And that is a job in itself. The writing part was the easy part, but it's getting an illustrator. And I searched for my previous book from New York to L.A., and guess where I found her? In Chicago, of all places. And her name is Emily Craybaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a fabulous job. And how it works also, because I was kind of new with this, it goes page by page. You send her one page. She does the illustration. She sends it back to you. If there's any changes, whatever. And this is it. And you know what the fun part about this is? I have never met her in person because with technology today, it's all done from the comfort of your home.
Sure.
It's remarkable that's our meeting, our Zoom, just like I'm talking to you today. This is how it works. And she did the book. She did a beautiful job. And it's about a country boy with a love for his dog. And I mean, it would be the craziest things. Like maybe I would message her back and say, Emily, I want him to have longer fingers. She would redo it and the fingers would be longer. And that's how all of that culminated into the book. And of course, when you write a book, as you know, there's quite a bit to it because besides getting it published, that's the first step. But you have to promote it. You have to sell it. You got to do book readings. We were doing libraries, kids, all the, you've got to do all of that stuff.
Right.
You have to get yourself out there. That's what it is. Now, if you are someone like, you know, Michelle Obama or Kathy Lee Gifford, that works a little differently. But when you are doing this yourself, that's something anyone that is interested in writing a book needs to know. It's a very fun, very uplifting process, but there is a process to it, and you've got to be available. It is a job after you do the book.
So do you have the book in front of you? Can you give us a little?
I actually don't, but this is the dog. This is Sophie that is in the book. It's a little furry dog that we had created. And the name of the book is Silas and Sophie. It's a country boy. It's Barnes & Noble and Amazon and all over. But I'm really looking forward to this Halloween book that I did because I want this one to be even a little bigger. And I've already spoken to people with appearances on national talk shows. So, and that is one way to get it out there. And of course, being in the business, I have the connections. It is very hard. You know, you just don't pick up the phone, call Tamron Hall and say, I want to be on your show.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. There are a lot of connections. And I don't know if I will do more books or not. I just, it's something that I've really wanted to do. I'm actually thinking of doing a book, Larry, about my life. Honestly, because, you know, I give a lot of talks to schools and I preach to people that want to be in the business. And believe it or not, yes, you could. If I did it, anyone could. It's a journey, but you can do it. And growing up from the south side of Chicago to working at Paramount in Los Angeles and working at the Sunset Gower Studios, when I did Days of Our Lives back in the 80s, I actually worked in Elizabeth Montgomery's living room from Bewitched. It was the same soundstage. So what a thrill that was. And meeting people along the way, meeting the Golden Girls, because sure. The Golden Girls used to shoot right next door at the Sunset Gower Studios. So it was very magical. And you know what? You just do it. It's persistence. And I tell everyone, it starts with a photo and a resume.
Well, that brings me to, you know, since I work with a lot of students and I gave them some tough love advice about getting into any kind of show business. But tell us your perspective about, you know, I said, you know, like a working actor, and I'm talking kind of theater here. You go to about 30 auditions for every job you might land. And I said, that's just being a working actor. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell everyone, and I'm sure, Larry, you will agree, you have to have a heart like a rock.
Yeah.
You will be told you're too tall, too short, too fat, too skinny. That's the way it is. Some may come right out and say you're lousy right to your face or get out of this business. I can tell you right now, I will not mention the name, but she is a very popular news person, coast to coast. Everybody knows her. And I had the chance to meet her, and she told me how a news director came in one day and his exact words were, Dow, you know what? I get out of this business. You're nothing to look at. You have no talent. You have nothing. She was the number one news anchor lady, I will say, on one of the morning shows, coast to coast, very successful, living in a penthouse in New York, everything. Now, my question is, Larry, where is this gentleman that told her that? Probably flipping pizzas.
Right.
And I actually had that experience once, too, many years ago. I always wanted to be a reporter, and I went to Boston. And this was right out of college. Now, you know, Boston is also kind of a major market. And I mean, I just got back a letter from him like I wasted his time. And what did I do? I have no experience, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? You move on. And that is very true. And also, as you know, it's a business. The person that tells you on a Monday you're no good good, may hire you on a Tuesday. Or the person that tells you that on a Monday, he's fired on a Tuesday.
Right.
So that's, yes, that's how the business works.
Yeah, I always tell people that, that especially going into acting, I says, you have to treat yourself as a product. And then it's not personal necessarily. I mean, they may come across like you described personally, but you're a product and you have to treat that as a product. And you go out and market the product. The product, it's not you personally. So I think that's an important distinction that in coming into the business,
exactly.
They have to make.
Exactly. So. And the marketing is... I hate to use the word prostitute, but I have told that to students. You're like a prostitute. You're out there selling yourself.
Right.
This is what you're doing. Not only are you selling yourself, you're selling your talent. You're telling them everything about you. You know, say you do a commercial, and I've been in this position. This was for McDonald's later when I was a teen. You know what question they asked me? So tell us, how do you like the Big Mac? And I was like, wow. And you know, no, if you're going to say, no, you know, I get one a year, you really think you're going to get the job?
No.
You know what they want to hear? Heck, I love it so much I eat it for breakfast. See, yes. That's the answer they want right. to hear. You are selling yourself. You're showing them your personality. You go in, you shake a hand. You meet a casting director. They are the people that pick the talent
right.
in the commercials. You know, you start something off like, oh, geez, I love that red top on you. See, something to get a conversation going. And of course, as you know, when you audition, now a lot of stuff today is done more online than actually at the actual office. But back in the day, you went to the office and, you know, you would always say, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I look forward to hearing from you. And that's the way it ends. You don't get no answer right there.
Right.
They don't say, yeah, we love you. It doesn't work that way. So, yeah, it's a business. It could be a very heartbreaking business. It could be a very, I guess is the word, disillusioning business. Yeah, you just take everything as it comes. And sooner or later, something happens. And remember, not everybody that's in the business does exactly what they want. I mean, I read an article years ago where Elizabeth Taylor did not get roles that she really wanted. That's how the business operates. But persistence pays off and dedication. You've got to be very dedicated to the business.
Well, I always tell, again, the people I've contacted, the emphasis is not show business, it's show business. And I think that what your point is
exactly.
very much the same thing.
And I will tell you, working in Hollywood, you know, we've all heard the Hollywood stories, but from my point of view, my perspective, I have seen nothing but professionalism all the way down the line. I mean, from the security guard at the door to working on the soundstage, I have never, ever seen anything that I could say, whoa, that shocked me. This is the dark side of Hollywood. I have never seen it.
Is there a role or something that you would like to have done or you know, down the road? I mean, that and maybe still want to do that you can do? Is there something role or challenging thing like that or something else other than performing?
You know, that's a good question. You know, as you pointed at the beginning, I've kind of done it all.
Yeah,
I really have. And, you know, I tell this to everyone. I've been doing this business before I knew what I was doing. I didn't even know what I was getting into. So, you know, I've done a lot. And sometimes I sit and, you know, I hear where people will say, and I've heard this told to my face, boy, this guy's got an ego. This guy's got, hey, I did it. And I'm proud of what I did. I've got the right to say that. I did this work. So, you know what? I really have done an awful lot. And I can't really think of anything that I would really like to, besides maybe host a national talk show.
Oh, okay.
You know, be the next male version of Ellen DeGeneres. Something like that. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind doing that. I've hosted talk shows. In fact, I need to throw this in. Lake Shore. I was the one that cut the ribbon at the opening in 1990. I cut the ribbon with Harry Porterfield at your facility. So like I said, yeah, it's just, I've done so much. And all I will say, I've worked with and I have met the greatest people along the way and I've learned so much from them. I cannot think of anybody negative. I learned so much from Mary Tyler Moore. I did an interview with Mary back in the day. Wonderful. Loretta Swit from MASH, Cloris Leachman. God, I mean, I interviewed O.J. Simpson's detectives.
So, Mark, as you're auditioning and you mentioned all the rejections and, you know, it goes one way or the other. Is there a role that you did audition for that you really, really you're still thinking about it, that you did not.
Actually, it is. And you know what? It was for the lottery. It was for the Illinois lottery. And the role was, this was for a holiday lottery. We were to stand on bleachers. You know what bleachers are, like a football field. There were like 40 of us standing. And we had the lottery ticket in our hand. And we had to, you know, kind of mimic that song, Ring Christmas Bells, Merry. Really ring da 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 da, and we had to go like da 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 da, and I thought I did so great, and I really wanted that role. Don't ask why, but I really did. Never got it. Never heard from them. So I do think of that. So everybody tells me, well, you just didn't sing well enough, or whatever, you know. And that's how it goes. And I've been in positions where I met casting directors, and they say, oh, you did wonderful. Do a second reading for us. And you kind of get all giddy. Wow, I really landed this role. And I called the agent, and I says, God, I did good. I did a second reading. Days go by. I hear nothing. I called him. He says to me, well, let's just say someone read better than you. and that's the business. You just accept.
We've just got about a minute and a half left, but we want to give you a chance to tell us about any upcoming projects you have. You told us mostly about the books and everything.
I just was a judge in a talent show, and I'm going to be hosting a talent show. I don't know if I could say what town, but it is local here in Northwest Indiana. And there's the magazine Panorama Now. I'm right. supposed to be on the cover of next month's edition. So you'll kind of read my story there again from 3 years ago. And yeah, that's basically it. But, you know, as far as working on things, I don't know. But I will tell you, my mind goes 360. I mean, I'm always thinking of things. That's what it's about. And, you know, if you were to ask me, I probably would tell you, I have no idea what I'm going to do tomorrow. I mean, that's just the way this business is. And I love it that way.
That's excellent. Any contact information or Facebook or social media?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Mark Edward Willows. I use the middle name, and the last name is with Y. On L, W-I-L-O-W-S. And I am on Instagram also and Twitter, but I don't get much on it. Twitter would be at Mark Willows, but I am always on Facebook and I'm always checking. And that's the way anybody can reach out to me. But again, I love what I do. And for anyone that may be listening to your show, if you have this dream, go and follow it. I tell that to everyone.
Well, Esther and I both appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Mark Edward Willows, actor, and has a storied career to tell, and we're glad he could share it with our audience. Mark, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Larry and Esther, for having me.
Hi there. This is Public Radio theme composer B.J. Lederman, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome John Young to Art on the Air. John is an author. His most recent novel is called Getting Huge. He is also the author of When the Coin is in the Air and the collection Fire in the Field and Other Stories. When John was 8, he told his mother he wanted to be a scientist or a clown. I look forward to hearing the rest of that story. Thank you, John, for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hi.
Well, thank you both. I really appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to our talk, Gary.
Well, we really like to find out all about our guests and their, like we talked about, your origin story. And how I always say is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So, John, tell us about yourself.
Oh, well, I grew up in Indiana. I like to say I grew up beyond the suburbs in Indianapolis, actually in the corner of one of my grandfather's cornfields. So I grew up there and, you know, had sort of a rough and tumble childhood, knocking around the countryside and working on farms nearby and doing that kind of life. Always envisioned myself going to Purdue and becoming a forester or something. And then lo and behold, I sort of got scooped up by a theater teacher in high school who inspired me and turned me on to literature through theater. And then I had another great English teacher who took that a step further. And next thing I knew, I was applying to Indiana University to study English. So I went to IU and studied English and theater and picked up a teaching degree and went on to teach at Cathedral High School in Indianapolis for a couple of years. And my brother was starting an advertising agency and he needed some help with a couple of things. I jumped in and wrote a couple of radio spots, radio commercials that ended up winning some state and national awards. And next thing I knew, people were asking me to do more of it. And I was teaching school and then running to a recording studio to record commercials. And I realized I could make a living as a freelance writer doing advertising work and maybe writing a little fiction on the side. And sort of pursued that for a long time.
Is it so? It's so beautiful how you can be set on one path and then you become a tumbleweed and like these opportunities just present themselves. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, that's one of the beautiful things in life, right? You can, if you keep your head up and you look around and you pay attention, things emerge.
Yeah.
Paying attention is super important to all these things, especially in the arts. You know, I mean, people sometimes say, how long did it take you to write that book? And I say, well, this is, I guess 60 years now.
Right.
So, exactly. You know, it's like it's a lifetime's work in a way. I went on to, and my wife and I ended up moving to Boston, and I continued advertising there and had a really terrific time in Boston, loved it there, furthered my career as a copywriter and creative director, then got lured back to the Midwest to help run the largest ad agency in Cincinnati. I was the their first executive creative director and helped run the creative department there. And that was a great gig. Love that. And, you know, we ended up selling that company to one of the big holding companies out of London, WPP. And that sort of freed me to turn my attention back to fiction, which was always a first love anyway. And that led to my first novel, When the Coin is in the Air, was published in 2019. Followed that up with a collection of short stories, some of which I had written originally back when I was doing my MFA in Boston at Emerson College.
And so, and this one actually is kind of, that was sort of part of that collection, wasn't it? The germ of that story.
Yes, that's right. This novel had its beginnings were in a short story called A Pumpkin Summer. And the interesting thing about that story is that my wife and I, about 1990, went to the Topsfield Fair, which is the oldest fair in America. And we just happened to be at the Topsfield Fair north of Boston on the day of the giant pumpkin weigh-in. Now, as a kid, you know, there was a farm down the road from my house where this family grew pumpkins and sold pumpkins every fall. But I'd never seen anything like these pumpkins. I mean, pumpkins so big an adult could sit inside, and I'm not exaggerating, that big. And I kept looking at them, and I kind of couldn't get away from them. I kept saying, what kind of person does this? What compels someone to, you know, spend a summer nursing
care
along
and tender.
A pumpkin.
Yeah, care.
Yes,
care
yes. For, yeah. And so, and I guess in a way, this novel is my answer to that story because I couldn't stop thinking about those characters.
You know, that might be a good point for us to, you know, to read the pumpkin portion of the book there and let us hear that whole story there while you're doing that. So it's from the Getting Huge, which is coming out in April of this year. So, John, tell us.
Yes, it just came out April 1st, just the other day. Let's see. I'm going to jump to a point here where our narrator, Reverend John Crackstone, who is six feet 11 tall, he is looking at the pumpkins, and he's kind of suffering from his memories of his work, which has been a burden for him. His deacons and he do not see eye to eye, and they're struggling a bit.
Literally.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well said. Well done, Esther. So here we go. With the pumpkins, something new and full of promise filled my life. Under my care, bloomed measurable change, growth, improvement. Those little sprouts I put in the ground, shorter than my little finger and fragile as a butterfly, grew and grew. The vines bulked up, developing a kind of animal sinew, a strength, conveying water and nutrients, the water and nutrients I provided. I measured the vines against myself, growing thicker than one finger, thicker than my thumb. And then one day I called Carol over. I might have to pause here for a second to say Carol is the alluring next door neighbor who is an avid gardener herself and the subject of his interest. I called Carol over and then measured them against her thin and muscular wrist, then her ankle, then my wrist. And when the buds swelled and bloomed, I actually blushed when Carol came over to look at the flowers. I'll pause there.
Oh, that's great. And that's from Getting Huge with John Young at, right here on Art in the Air. Now, I wanted to go back just to a question. When you said you were in the studio, did you voice any of those early commercials?
I did not. I directed them, but I didn't voice any.
Because you have a good voice. It sounds like that'd be something that you might also do. But yeah, too many.
Well, thank you. I did do the audio book for When the Coin is in the Air.
Okay.
And I'm scheduled to go into the recording studio next week to read Getting Huge. And that will be hopefully out in about a month.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Okay. So like with Getting Huge, you told us about your, you know, the farm beginnings. And so with The Coin in the Air, were you a sports family? Do you have siblings? What was, you know, what kind of art or was literature a big part of the family?
Well, I have to confess that When the Coin is in the Air is a semi-autobiographical novel.
Okay.
As many people's first novels are. It's a coming-of-age story, and yes, sports were a big part of my family. I have two older sisters and an older brother. I'm the youngest. And for the novel, it's just the two brothers. So there are definitely, it's definitely fictionalized. And you know, I grew up playing football, especially, and played all three of what we called the important sports when I was a kid: football, baseball, and basketball. In high school, went to Lawrence Central High School in Indianapolis, which had a terrific basketball team, and I couldn't play for them, but I definitely played on the football team and loved that. Those are the roots there for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't seem like an auto biography, but it's kind of hard not to let our experiences work their way in.
I think that's true. Even of Getting Huge, you know, I was never a minister and I'm not 6 feet 11 tall. I'm not a gardener. I've never grown a pumpkin, but at the same time, I have had these kinds of struggles that he has of feeling like I'm working in the wrong place with the wrong people and trying to meet expectations that somehow don't match my values. And that's what John Crackstone's rubbing up against for sure.
Right. Now, you, in the blush of your current release, you may not be thinking about it, but just go ahead and thinking ahead. Do you have your next novel in mind or your next project in mind?
Yes, right now I'm working on my fourth book, which is another novel. It'll be my third novel. I'm in the third draft right now, and I'm struggling against that. It's a wrestling match. But I don't really talk about work in progress. I think of it as still being wet clay. So it's still getting shaped and manipulated and molded. So it's not really ready for me to talk about yet.
Sure. Does your spouse help you with editing or anything like that? I said, well, what do you think about this section or something like that? Or do you do that or not? Or maybe they don't even want to help you with that.
Well, she does read my work. She's one of my early readers, but I don't share anything too early with her even. And I've also got this creative cadre that I meet with every week, three friends of mine who we've been friends for many years. And even those guys don't know hardly anything about the project that I'm working on right now. I do have a development editor, and after I've written two drafts, I typically share it with her, and she comes back with suggestions. And then I rework.
I think things need to percolate before they're shared sometimes, you know?
Yes, that's right. And both in the short percolation and the longer one. I mean, my works, pretty much all of them, I carry around in my head for many years, many, many years, actually, as they take shape. And as, you know, a situation or a character, I can start with either one. But those two things have to come together in a way that just kind of merge and meld into my head, and then I can sit down and write a story.
So I have like an odd sort of question for you. As we were growing up, or at least when we were kids, we had, you know, stand against the wall and see how tall you are. So what is the significance of, and how did you come up with 6 foot 11? What was your thought process?
Well, you know, I really wanted to make this character, John Crackstone, as physically out of place as he is psychologically in the town of Concord, Massachusetts. He grew up there. He never felt at home there, never felt like he belonged, didn't really want to move back as an adult, but his father offered him this opportunity. His father was a famous minister and brought his son down from the mountain, literally from the White Mountains of New Hampshire, to take over the church. And so John felt obligated to do it, and he did. Now we see his struggles.
Yeah. I mean, I, as I was reading the book, you could just feel for him when you're talking about how his mother had to make all his clothes and he stuck that Izod on his shirt. And, yes. You know, you just feel his high school experiences so deeply.
Yes. The stork is a dork, right? He gets that nickname when he's in high school, probably his freshman year, and he never escapes it. And he even refers mentally to himself that way when he blunders along at different points in his adult life. And so it's like it's a part of his fabric now.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. So when you're developing your characters, a lot of authors maybe reference somebody or a composite of people they know in your life. How does that process work for you? I mean, how do you create your characters? You know, you create them out of a whole cloth on your own, but you know, I'm just curious about your process in creating your characters.
That's a great question. And it's one that is not always consistent. You know, there are different pieces I collect from different people. The woman next door, Carol, physically resembles a couple of people I worked with in the advertising world, very, very much in my own mind modeled on those two women in particular who had both been college gymnasts, which tells you something about right. Carol. She's got that kind of agility and athleticism. You know, for John Crackstone, there were some features that I think are things that I kind of understand intuitively, but there are also things like I did know a couple really tall people in my life and, you know, observed how they moved around. There was a basketball player that I knew real well who was 7'2", and he literally would duck through doorways. But, you know, most of us go through our lives and never actually see a person that tall. There just aren't very many of them in the world. According to my research, there are about 3,000 people who are 7 feet or taller on the whole planet.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy rare. So that further makes John Crackstone stick out because, as he likes to say, 7 feet in shoes.
Well, and also naming things. Were you that way as a child, too? If you had pets, did they have interesting names? Because Crackstone, what is the history of, is that something you put together? Is that somebody, did you know somebody with that familial name?
Oh, you know what? That actually comes from the Mayflower. And that's in the book, actually. One of the things I love about this, a couple of things I love about the book are that it actually does tap history here and there, which I think makes sense in New England. One of the things that John Crackstone carries is this sort of burden of history. And in his case, he was named after, there were two John Crackstones on the Mayflower. One of them, the father, died in 1621, that first winter. And the younger John Crackstone, his son, died, I think it was 4 or 5 years later. So that's where I got that name, right off the Mayflower. It tied back, yeah.
Yeah, you never know, like, when you're reading something, whether it is actual history or whether it's a novel history.
Yes, that's right. And I did a little of both, to be honest. Like, I created his multiple great-grandfathers. In the novel is a person named William Crackstone, who came over from, you know, 5 years after John Crackstone's, the two John Crackstones. But that was all fictionalized. That's just made up.
It's amazing the history of names. I know in my family, my mom was a stonebreaker, but they came over from Germany with Steinbrecher. So I often wonder what they did. I says, did you guys in prison, your Crackstones? Anyway, we'd love
I'm going to write that down. I'm going to steal that.
Go right ahead. Hey, if you have another passage, we'd love to hear something else from the book.
Sure. Actually, we're just talking about the history, so maybe I'll read a little bit of that.
Well, that'd be great.
So as I mentioned, his father was very successful before him, done a lot of work, was president of the Congregationalist Church of America, the association. So adding to my father's considerable shadow stretched the long history of Crackstones in America. We Crackstones sailed over on the Mayflower, literally, and we've been in New England ever since. My namesake, John Crackstone, was on the Mayflower with his son, also named John Crackstone. The elder died the first winter of 1621. His son died 6 years later. That might have been the end of the American Crackstones, but my direct line, multi-great-grandfather William Crackstone, younger brother of the elder John, landed in Salem, Massachusetts in 1625. Because of our link to the brother and not a direct descendant, my father was snubbed by the General Society of Mayflower Descendants, the GSMD, also known to some on the South Shore as the Pompous Asses Club. Anyway, he was a man of action, this old William Crackstone of the 17th century. He helped settle Beverly, Massachusetts, and just across the Salem Harbor in 1626, and died at the age of 82. You can still see his gray slate headstone in the old cemetery behind the police station in Beverly. It was after this man of action, this William, that my father was named.
You know, I love the imagery that that you have. You can just picture these things. And that's a real gift to be able to create those images, you know, that you can get from just words. I think that's a real craft. Yeah.
It's so true that in the book, there's so many memorable imagery, but like a row of tarnished silver dollars. That one just really grabbed me. I mean, you have a nice use of language.
Oh, thank you. Those are the buttons on Nancy's dress that she's wearing Easter Sunday, which he doesn't like her dress.
And you answered this question about what denomination, the congregational, which is what our audience is familiar, is very, very, I guess you would say, democratic in terms of how they operate, in terms of there's no church hierarchy and everything. So that's an interesting choice of that. Did you, just curious, are you familiar with that tradition? Was that something you came out of, or just use that?
I just did some homework on it, you know, to be honest. I did not come out of it, but it's very prominent in New England. And it just felt right to use that one. It also has nice connections back to Cotton Mather and some people like that he brings up in the book. It's interesting because it's a minister and, you know, they're in a church, but it's not a religious book, which is kind of an interesting thing. You know, it's really about one man's struggle to find a place where he belongs.
And that's difficult. But it takes you through that journey and everything. And you can feel his awkwardness of being such a tall person. And is there any other projects? We talked about, you know, novels, but you have other projects that you do or other things that you're doing besides writing?
You know, not a lot, actually.
Scientist or clown.
That scientist or clown thing. We can come back to that. I actually did say that to my mother when I was 8 years old. And in a way, you know, I say that I kind of achieved it by doing advertising because I got the chance to get up in front of an audience and do presentations. And, I also did a lot of work with during the birth of the internet. I happened to be in the right place at the right time and did a lot of work around technology and the internet and so forth. So, I kind of feel like I did that. And I do still love science and I do still kind of love clowning around.
What is your writing process in terms of like just the mechanics of it? Do you handwrite things down or write phrases, or do you type into a word processor, or do you use old-fashioned typewriter, just the physical?
Yeah, I'm sort of a morning person, so I'm usually at my desk between 6:30 and 7 every day. And then I type into the computer, but I also have stacks of notes all over the house, actually. It's annoying as hell to my wife. Sometimes I'll turn on the light in the middle of the night and something has awakened me and I've got to jot it down. I also sneak away to a cabin at a state park here. And I always rent cabin number 36 because it has the best view of the lake. This is at Houston Woods near Miami of Ohio University in Oxford, Ohio. And I go there. And when I'm there, time starts to get slippery. I typically wake up around 3 in the morning and start working. Some days I've got 1,500 words down by 6 a.m.
Wow. You know?
I'm very productive when I'm there, generally. I've had one bad trip.
Sounds so idyllic, really.
It really has been a good way for me to get away from everyone. And I don't talk to anybody for about 4 days. I just lock myself in the cabin there. I bring my food in and I only leave to take a hike every day. Otherwise, I'm just by myself and writing.
Kind of like your own Walden Pond type thing.
A little bit. It's not much bigger than Thoreau's cabin either, by the way. It's a pretty small cabin.
Well, we're just, I hate to wrap it up here, but John, we wanted to do that. So we'd like to give you a chance to tell us about when the book's coming out or did already come out and where they can find it and everything like that.
Yeah, terrific. Thank you for that. Yes, the novel just came out April 1st, so I'm glad to be able to tell people that. And you can get it at virtually any bookstore in the world. You may have to order it from if you have a small local bookstore, they can order it for you. They can get it. It's also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all of the big, online publish our sales channels, as well as through my publisher. If you want to go to Guernica Editions, they sell off their website also.
Excellent. And you can find his website at johnyoungwriter.com. That's all run together, johnyoungwriter.com. John Young, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air with his new novel, Getting Huge. It came out April 1st, and you can find information online. Thank you so much for joining us on Art of the Air.
Thank you. It's been so delightful.
Esther, Larry, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun for me, and let's hope this helps it go. All right.
Best Bye-bye. Of luck.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Art in the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show